Okay, so I want to start today with a scenario that I think is pretty much universal. I mean, I guarantee you've been here. It's like 6:00 p.m. on a Thursday. You've had a brutal day at work, skipped lunch, back-to-back meetings, your blood sugar is just on the floor, and you make the fatal tactical error of walking into a grocery store without a shopping list.
Oh, I know exactly where this is going. This is the danger zone. You are walking into a trap.
It is the ultimate danger zone. You walk in, you have the best intentions, you tell yourself, I'm just here for milk, maybe some spinach, very healthy. But because your stomach is growling, your brain chemistry has, it's completely changed. You are not a rational actor anymore.
No, the primitive brain has taken the wheel.
Exactly. So instead of milk and spinach, you walk out with a cart full of spicy chips, a frozen pizza, maybe a rotisserie chicken.
Oh, the chicken you're already eating in the car.
Yes, the one you're eating on the way home. And some weird brand of cookies you don't even like.
And the worst part is the aftermath, right? You get home, you eat the junk, the sugar crash hits, and you're looking at the receipt thinking, why? Why did I buy all this? Ah, I am a rational adult. I know about nutrition. What happened?
You bought it because you were hungry shopping. Your judgment was compromised by a physiological craving. Now, usually this just leads to a stomach ache, but
Yeah.
why are we talking about grocery shopping on a show about cryptocurrency? Because today's deep dive is based on a fascinating course on staying safe in crypto, specifically Lesson 11, which argues that we do the exact same thing with our investments.
That's right. The source material draws this incredibly vivid parallel. Emotional trading is just hungry shopping with much, much higher stakes. And instead of a stomach ache, you get, financial ruin.
It frames the problem so perfectly. We like to think of ourselves as these logical investors. We're looking at charts, reading white papers, analyzing tokenomics. But the sources argue that when we get emotional, whether that's the dopamine hit of excitement or that cortisol spike of fear, we become that starving person in the snack aisle. We make choices we are, like, mathematically guaranteed to regret.
And the stakes are the key here. The mission of this deep dive is really to dissect a pretty bold claim made in the coursework. They argue that the biggest losses in crypto often don't come from sophisticated hackers or rug pulls or even just bad luck. They come from us.
The call is coming from inside the house.
Precisely. They come from our own internal wiring. The market is basically designed to trigger these responses. So our goal today is to map out these specific psychological traps, the snacks we impulse buy, and more importantly, build a defense system against them.
Okay, so let's get into the taxonomy of these traps. The source material categorizes them really well. I want to start with the first category, which I kind of think of as the high adrenaline traps. These are the ones that get your heart racing, your palms sweating. And the undisputed king of this category is FOMO.
Fear of missing out. It's an acronym we toss around a lot, almost casually, but the source material actually breaks down the mechanics of it in a way that's it's quite sobering.
It's so visceral. We've all felt it. You open your phone, you check Twitter or a Telegram group, and it feels like every single person on Earth is getting rich, except you. You see the screenshots of 1,000% gains. There's this internal monologue that just screams, "Everyone is making money. The train is leaving. I need to get Inevitable or I'll be poor forever."
It is a very, very powerful physiological response. It triggers a scarcity mindset. Your brain perceives a threat, the threat of being left behind by the tribe. But here is the cold, hard reality that the lesson points out, and this is something every listener needs to really, really internalize. By the time an asset is hot enough to be all over your social feed and causing that visceral FOMO reaction, the easy gains are usually gone.
That is such a tough pill to swallow. We always feel like we're early because we just saw it, but the market moves way faster than our Twitter feed.
Exactly. I mean, think about the mechanics of the market. For a price to skyrocket, people have to be buying. If everyone is shouting about how great a coin is, that means they have already bought it. They're incentivized to shout about it. So if you buy in during a massive FOMO spike, who are you buying from?
You're buying from the people who got in a week ago, the ones who are cashing out.
Right. You are essentially buying what the early smart investors are selling. In trading terms, the source material uses a phrase that I find particularly brutal but accurate. You become their exit liquidity.
Ouch. Exit liquidity. That hurts to hear. It basically means you are the person holding the bag so someone else can buy a yacht.
It's harsh, but it's the truth of market cycles. The source material emphasizes that FOMO is not an investment strategy. It's a biological trick. You are reacting to social proof, not to financial data.
So if we know our biology is trying to trick us, and we know we don't want to be exit liquidity, how do we stop it? The source material offers a couple of really specific protection strategies. It's not just try harder, because we all know that doesn't work.
No, willpower fatigues. You need rules. The first one is simple, but it's incredibly effective. The 24-hour rule. If you get that sudden urge to impulse buy a token you hadn't even heard of yesterday, that hungry shopping feeling where you just need it, you force yourself to wait 24 hours.
You just sit on your hands.
You do nothing. You put the phone down. You close the laptop. And usually within 24 hours, one of two things will happen. Either the emotion fades and you realize, wait, I don't actually know anything about this project, or the price corrects and you save yourself a 20% loss right off the bat.
It's amazing how much clarity you get just by sleeping on it. The adrenaline just leaves the system. The second protection they've mentioned is a question you have to ask yourself, Ricky. If I didn't want this yesterday, why do I want it today?
That is the crucial reality check. Am I buying this because the fundamentals of the project changed? Did they sign some massive partnership? Did the tech break through? Or am I buying it just because the line on the chart is green and looking pasty?
Right. If the only reason you want it is because the price is going up, you are momentum chasing, not investing. And as we know, momentum turns very, very quickly.
Exactly. And usually right after you buy.
Okay, so that's the excitement trap, the greed side of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
But the sources also cover the flip side, which is, I'd say it's arguably even more dangerous because it triggers our survival instincts, panic selling.
This is when the adrenaline isn't excitement. It's pure, unadulterated terror.
The internal monologue shifts from I'm missing out to it's crashing, it's going to zero, I need to sell everything right now before I lose it all.
Yeah, and this is where understanding the technical difference between paper losses and realized losses is just so crucial. The source makes a really important distinction here. Volatility is a feature of crypto, not a bug. If you are in this asset class, you have to accept that a 20% drop feels like the apocalypse to a newbie. But in this market, it's basically just a Tuesday afternoon.
Right. If you zoom out, the chart is usually jagged.
Yeah.
It's rarely a straight line up.
Exactly. If you hold an asset and a price drops, you haven't actually lost any money yet. You have a paper loss or an unrealized loss. You still own the same amount of coins. But the moment you hit sell in a panic, you crystallize that loss. You make it permanent. You can't recover from it because you've taken your chips off the table.
To illustrate this, the source material, specifically Exercise 11, gives us this really great tale of two investors, Alex and Jordan. And I think walking through this case study perfectly captures the difference in mindset. It's sort of a parable.
It is. Let's look at Alex first.
Yeah.
This is the hungry shopper approach applied to fear.
So situation A, the market corrects. Bitcoin drops 20% in a single day. The news headlines are all doom and gloom. Alex checks his portfolio, sees he's down by, say, $150. Now, that's not a life-changing amount for him, but it hurts. It feels like a failure. His heart starts racing. He spirals. He thinks, this is it. The bubble has popped. It's all going to zero. So in a desperate attempt to save what's left, he sells everything at the absolute bottom.
And then, of course, the market does what markets so often do.
Exactly. Murphy's Law kicks in. The next day, the panic subsides, buyers step in, and the price recovers 15%. But Alex is out. He can't get back in at the same position. He lost money he didn't need to lose because he let the panic drive the car. He solidified a temporary dip into a permanent loss.
Now compare that to Jordan in situation B. Same market, same crash, same red numbers on the screen. She feels nervous. The source emphasizes she is human. She feels the fear just like Alex, but she doesn't react to the feeling.
All right, she has a pre-existing condition.
Yeah.
A plan. The source says her internal monologue is different. She tells herself, I only invested what I can afford to lose. I'm in this for the long haul. The fundamentals haven't changed. And then, and this is my favorite part, she closes the app and goes for a walk.
That walk is probably the most profitable financial decision she made all week.
Seriously. It sounds so simple, almost too simple, but it's physiologically necessary.
It is. By going for a walk, she is physically removing herself from the stimulus, the flashing red numbers, the screaming headlines. She is letting her cortisol levels drop so her prefrontal cortex, the logical part of her brain, can come back online. A week later, her portfolio is likely back to where it was.
And the key takeaway here isn't that Jordan is some genius market analyst who knew the price would bounce back.
No, Jordan didn't win because she predicted the recovery. She won because she had a plan before the emotion hit. She recognized that hungry shopping feeling, the panic, and she walked out of the store before she did something stupid.
That is such a critical distinction. It's not about predicting the market. It's about predicting yourself. It's about knowing that future you is going to be scared. So present you needs to set up guardrails.
Exactly. You have to outsmart your future emotional self.
Okay, those are the high adrenaline traps, FOMO and panic. But the source material moves on to a second category that I find even more insidious because they're slower, quieter, and deeper. These are what I call the ego traps. These aren't about speed, they're about pride. And the first one is revenge trading.
Oh, this is a dangerous one. This usually happens right after you've taken a loss.
The feeling is, I lost money. That wasn't fair. The market took something from me, and I need to force it to give it back to me right now.
It's the get-even mentality. If you've ever played poker, this is called going on tilt. You see it in casinos all the time. Someone loses a hand of blackjack, and instead of walking away or playing their normal strategy, they double their bet to try and wipe out the loss in one go. They're angry at the dealer.
And why is this such a specific trap in crypto?
Because the market is indifferent. The expert source emphasizes this hard truth. The market doesn't know you exist. It doesn't know you lost money, and it certainly does not owe you a refund. When you try to force a trade to recover a loss, you are trading with high emotion and very low logic.
And you're usually increasing your position size to make the money back faster.
Right. You take bigger risks, you leverage up, you ignore warning signs because you are laser focused on that break-even number. And statistically, you almost always compound the loss. You turn a manageable stumble into a catastrophic fall.
You dig the hole deeper.
You dig the hole deeper. The protection strategy here is tough because it requires swallowing your pride. You have to accept the loss. Take a break. And the golden rule from the source, never try to recover a loss in a single trade. If you lost it over a week, don't try to make it back in an hour.
That leads us right into the cousin of revenge trading, which is the sunk cost fallacy.
This is a classic cognitive bias that affects everything from bad investments to, you know, bad relationships.
So if revenge trading is about making new bad bets to fix a mistake, sunk cost is about refusing to let go of old bad bets. It's that feeling of, I've already lost 50% on this coin. I've put so much into it. I can't sell now. If I sell, I'm admitting defeat.
It's emotional accounting. You are tying your self-worth to the trade. The logic is so flawed because the market doesn't care what you paid for the asset. Your entry price is historical trivia. It has no bearing on the future price action.
That's a powerful way to put it, historical trivia. Because the chart doesn't have a little line on it that says, this is where Dave bought in.
Exactly. The source puts it very clearly. Past investment is irrelevant to future potential. A bad investment doesn't magically become a good one just because you're losing money on it. Holding it until it comes back is often just opportunity cost.
Can you unpack opportunity cost for a second? I feel like that's a term people hear but don't really apply.
Sure. If you have, say, $1,000 tied up in a zombie coin that is going nowhere, it's down 90% and the team has quit. That is $1,000 that cannot be invested in a new, better project that might actually grow.
Yeah.
You aren't just losing money on the old coin. You are missing out on the gains of the new coin. You're losing twice.
And there is a fantastic litmus test in the source material to cut through this fog. If you're staring at a bag of tokens that's down 60% and you don't know whether to hold or sell, you ask yourself one question. Would I buy this asset at this price today?
It is such a clarifying question. Imagine that bag of tokens vanished and was replaced by its current cash value. So if you have $500 left in that investment, imagine you have $500 cash in your hand. Would you use that cash to buy that specific coin right now?
And if the answer is no way, that project is dead, then yeah. Why are you holding it?
Exactly. If you wouldn't buy it today, you shouldn't be holding it today. The only reason you are is the emotional attachment to the money you used to have. You need to fire the past you who made the bad trade and let present you manage the capital.
Man, that is powerful. It really cuts through the noise. Okay, we've done adrenaline, we've done ego. There is one more trap the source identifies, and this one is tricky because it targets our intellect. It's confirmation bias.
This one is dangerous because it disguises itself as diligence. It feels like you're being responsible. It feels like you're doing research.
Right. You find a coin you like, mm-hmm. and you start Googling it. You watch YouTube videos. You read Reddit threads. It's good, right?
Yeah.
That's D-Y-O-R. Do your own research.
Well, it depends on what you are reading. The trap of confirmation bias is that our brains unconsciously filter out anything that disagrees with what we want to believe. If you bought Mooncoin, you are only clicking on the YouTube video with the rocket emoji thumbnail that says 100x incoming.
And you scroll right past the boring article that warns about a security flaw in the smart contract.
Precisely. And in the age of algorithms, this is even worse. If you watch one bullish video, the algorithm feeds you 10 more. You end up in an echo chamber of your own making. You aren't actually researching. You're seeking validation. You are building a warm, fuzzy, one-sided picture that makes you feel good about your decision, but it ignores reality.
So what's the fix? How do we fight our own brain and the YouTube algorithms on this?
You have to play active defense. The source suggests a really counterintuitive approach. If you are bullish on a coin, you shouldn't be looking for more reasons to buy. You should be actively hunting for reasons to sell.
You need to find the haters.
You do. You need to value the people who disagree with you. Read the bear case. Look for the flaws. The key question to ask yourself is, what would make me wrong?
What would make me wrong?
If you can't answer that, if you can't name a single risk or downside, then you haven't looked. You aren't investing. You're gambling with blinders on.
I love that. It requires so much humility to actively look for why you might be an idiot.
It does, but it saves you money. It forces you to see the whole picture, not just the fantasy.
Right, so we've identified the traps. FOMO, panic, revenge, sunk cost, confirmation bias. It is a psychological minefield out there. But the source material doesn't just leave us depressed about our flawed brains. It actually has a section called Building Emotional Discipline. It gives us a toolkit.
This is the practical application. We know we can't trust our hungry shopping brain, so we need external systems guardrails to keep us in check.
The first tool is pre-planned rules. This goes right back to the Jordan example.
Right. You need to decide your moves before the emotions hit. When you are calm, cool, and collected, maybe on a Sunday morning with a coffee, you write down your rules. For example, I will not sell in the first 24 hours of a crash, or I will never invest more than 5% of my portfolio in one coin.
It's like making the shopping list before you go to the store. If it's not on the list, it doesn't go in the cart.
Exactly. When the panic hits, you don't have to think. Thinking during a panic is dangerous. You just follow the rule you made when you were rational. It removes the burden of decision-making when you are least equipped to handle it.
The second tool is automation. The source specifically mentions dollar cost averaging, or DCA. This seems to be the heavy lifter for avoiding emotional timing.
DCA is the ultimate antidote to emotional trading. Instead of trying to guess the bottom, which is, you know, impossible, you just set up an automatic buy, say $50 a Bitcoin every Monday, regardless of the price.
So if the price is high, you buy. If it crashes, you buy.
If the price is high, you buy a little less crypto for your $50. If it crashes, you buy more crypto for your $50. You automatically buy the dip without having to summon the courage to click the button. You remove the decision-making process entirely.
If you don't have to make a decision, you can't make an emotional decision. That's the logic. It sort of turns you into a machine.
And machines are much better investors than humans.
Now, the third tool is one I really like because it forces you to slow down. Journaling.
Yes. Now, I know some listeners might roll their eyes at journaling thinking it's like, dear diary, today I felt sad. But the source suggests something very specific. Writing down why you are making a trade before you execute it.
Just the act of writing it down must be helpful. It engages a different part of the brain.
It does. It forces you to articulate your thesis. If you have to write, I'm buying this token because I saw a funny meme and everyone on Twitter is screaming, you look at those words on paper and realize, wow, this is a terrible investment thesis. It exposes your own logic to yourself.
It's a shame filter.
It is. Plus, it gives you a data set. You can look back 3 months later and spot your patterns. Oh, look, every time I buy an altcoin on a Friday night after a couple of drinks, I lose 50%.
That is valuable data to have. It's like watching game tape for an athlete. You see your own bad habits.
Here.
And there's one final exercise mentioned in the source material that I think is really unique. It's called the letter to future self.
This is a great psychological trick. The exercise suggests writing a message to your future self, specifically tailored for when the market crashes.
So when things are good, green, and calm, you write a note to the you of 6 months from now who is freaking out.
Right. You write something like, dear future me, if you are reading this, the market is down. Take a deep breath. Remember why we invested in this project. The tech is solid. The team is good. We are here for the 5-year horizon, not the 5-minute horizon. Do not sell just because you were scared. Put the phone down and go for a walk.
It's like being your own therapist in advance.
It is. And when that crash happens, and it will happen, reading that note from your calm self acts as an anchor. It reminds you of your original conviction. It breaks the panic loop.
That is such a cool idea. I suppose the underlying theme of all these tools, rules, automation, journaling, is that we just can't trust our feelings in the moment. We need a system that is smarter than our mood.
That's right. But there is one final sort of compassionate note in the source material that I think is really important to end on. The goal of this deep dive isn't to turn you into a robot.
Right. We are meat computers, we have hormones, we have feelings.
Exactly. You will make emotional mistakes, you will FOMO into something stupid eventually, you will panic sell at some point. The source explicitly says, accept imperfection.
So if I mess up, I shouldn't beat myself up.
No, because shame is an emotion too. If you beat yourself up, you might try revenge trading to fix it. You start spiraling. The goal isn't to be perfect, it's just to reduce the frequency of the mistakes. If you can cut your emotional errors by 50%, your portfolio will look drastically different in 5 years.
That's a relief to hear. We're aiming for progress, not perfection.
Precisely. If you are a hungry shopper, just try to buy fewer spicy chips next time. You don't have to be perfect.
Well, we have covered a lot of ground today. We've gone from the hungry shopper looking at a bag of spicy chips in the grocery aisle to the high-stakes, high-speed world of crypto trading.
And the connection is undeniable. Our brains weren't built for 247 global financial markets. They were built for survival on the savannah.
To recap, we are all hungry shoppers.
Mm-hmm.
We are wired to buy high when we're excited and sell low when we're scared. But the key isn't to just try harder to be disciplined.
No. The key is to have the shopping list. Have the plan before you enter the store. Use tools like the 24-hour rule, the would I buy this today test, and active defense against confirmation bias.
And looking at the Jordan example again, the hero of our case study who went for the walk, I think there's one final provocation for our listeners to think about as they go about their week.
I was thinking about that too. In the scenario, Jordan's superpower wasn't analyzing a chart better than Alex. It was closing the app.
Right.
The source material mentions that checking prices constantly feeds emotional decision-making. Every time you refresh the chart, you are inviting a hit of dopamine or a spike of cortisol. You are poking the emotional bear. You are making yourself hungry.
So the provocative thought is?
Maybe the most profitable thing you can do this week isn't a trade at all.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's to stop looking at the charts entirely. If you have a plan and you have conviction, why do you need to watch the price every hour?
Silence the noise. Stick to the plan. I love it.
It's the ultimate discipline.
Thank you all for diving in with us today. Hopefully this helps you build that defense system so the next time the market goes crazy, you can just go for a walk.
See you next time.